Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, August 22nd, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is 67 degrees and sunny here in upstate New York. I don't know. Let me know how it sounds today. I am phoning it in, literally, on a landline. I don't do that too often, but don't have much of a choice. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show Cognitive Offloading, AI, and Autonomous Humanoid Robots. We looked at some pretty crazy stuff, including the fact that NASA is developing their own robotic space program using the Valkyrie robot. And one of the things that they had talked about is not only utilizing these robots that they will develop from this robotics challenge, which will be very much like the DARPA robotics challenge, utilizing college students to create the next generation of humanoid, but they'll be using these robots to send to Mars. That's what they said in the story, send it to Mars and help build a civilization, buildings, electricity, solar panels. And their second option would be to utilize these humanoid robots in the event of a disaster on planet Earth. And I'm envisioning, instead of sending FEMA trailers, they're going to send tractor trailers full of FEMA humanoid robots. So I don't know. The end of the show, we spent last week looking at AI, the brain, biology, just like always. The end of the show, looking at that robotics challenge, and then, of course, Sophia saying she doesn't want to kill humans anymore, and I don't know where we're going to really go today. I found a couple interesting stories over the weekend that I think we're going to kick it off with. There was one out of sciencemag.org titled, Biologists are Close to Reinventing the Genetic Code of Life, and we've discussed George Church many times, the secret meeting at Harvard with 150 geneticists discussing whether or not they were going to create the synthetic human genome. We found out last week that there was $23 or $33 million invested by DARPA into the Broad Institute, which is a collaboration between MIT and Harvard University, to not only create synthetic DNA, but to manufacture it as well on demand. The DARPA lady a long time ago, in an article talking about terraforming Mars, had mentioned being able to push a button and create life on demand. And I really think that this new project between DARPA and the Broad Institute is another piece of that puzzle. So anyway, biologists are close to reinventing the genetic code of life, August 18, 2016. The term life hacking usually refers to clever tweaks that make your life more productive, but this week in science, a team of scientists comes a step closer to the literal meaning, hacking the machinery of life itself. You know, if you've been watching the commercials on TV, I know my dad keeps pointing out to me that they're showing all kinds of commercials now about using your own immune system and being able to conquer cancer with these new amazing cures that they have that they've been working on. And don't forget, it's all about genetically modifying humans. That's what all of these curing cancer cures are all about. And it takes them the next step to figuring out how to recreate life and completely enslave us to the DNA level. They've designed, though not completely yet assembled, a synthetic E. coli genome that could use a protein coding system different from the one employed by all known life. Now, we've talked about E. coli before. They can use E. coli and CRISPR technology as well, and we're going to look at a lot of that. I have a bunch of stories lined up on that. But E. coli, you also realize, is where we had all these outbreaks. Didn't we have Chipotle and all these other restaurants and the bag salad? I mean, they all are E. coli infections that can actually kill people, but don't worry about it because We're going to genetically modify E. coli and create some new life form that in the future will be able to splice and dice your DNA and change you for the better, you defective human. requiring a staggering 62,000 DNA changes, the finished genome would be the most complicated genetic engineering feat so far. And E. coli running this written genome could become a new workhorse for laboratory experiments and a factory, ding, ding, desktop manufacturing for new industrial chemicals, its creators predict. Remember, we read a story a few weeks back as well that looked at them utilizing bacteria to actually manufacture drugs once they were inside of people. They were looking at gut bacteria as well as other bacteria that they could utilize to produce drugs on demand inside of a living organism. I just saw before I came down to do the show, there was a commercial from one of the oil companies talking about how amazing it is. Not only are they pumping oil now, but they are modifying organisms to be able to create green fuels, like out of algae and other things, utilizing genetic engineering. And we found that really where the entire synthetic biology project kind of roots from is from the Department of Energy. There's a 2013 synthetic biology report to Congress that is out there, and I've seen that they've had a few additional improvements on that, but that 2013 one was kind of right out there in your face. Talking about the whole plan, the Department of Energy goes all the way back to the Manhattan Project and a lot of the other nefarious things that we've had going on in this country for 50 or 60 years. Definitely something to take a look at. Such large-scale genomic hacks, and this is back to the E. coli, once seemed impossible, but no longer, says Peter Carr, a bioengineer at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Lincoln Laboratory in Lexington, who, of course, is not involved in the project. It is not easy, he says, but we can engineer life at profound scales, even something as fundamental as the genetic code. The genome hacking is underway in the lab of who? Oh, good old Georgie Church, our buddy, the one who was in charge of setting up the meeting at Harvard about creating the first synthetic human genome. George Church, the co-founder of the Broad Institute, yes, where DARPA put all that money now to create custom DNA and manufacturing. Yes, that George Church of Harvard University, the DNA sequencing pioneer who has become the most high-profile and at times controversial name in synthetic biology. And don't forget also, another co-founder of that Broad Institute has been pulled into that DOD panel where the head of Amazon and the head of Google are also taking their places, maybe some Google financing executive as well, we found out. Very interesting that the Department of Defense has someone from a synthetic biology institute on their board. This work, and this is the E. coli genetic manipulation work, takes advantage of the redundancy of life's genetic code, the language that DNA uses to instruct the cell's protein synthesizing machinery. To produce proteins, cells read DNA's four-letter alphabet in clusters called condons, codons, and that is your CATG. The 64 possible triplets are more than enough to encode the 20 amino acids that exist in nature, as well as stop the codons that mark the ends of the genes. And as a result, the genetic code is multiple codons from the same amino acid, and the codons CCC and CCG both encode the amino acid proline, for example. Church and others hypothesize that redundant codons could be eliminated, and by swapping out every CCC for a CCG in every gene, for instance, they could do that without harming the cell, and the gene that enables CCC to be transplanted could then be deleted entirely. There are a number of killer apps, they said, such as a recoded cell, says Farron Isaacs, a bioengineer at Yale University, who, with Church and colleagues, showed a stop condon can be swapped out entirely in E. coli. The cells could be immune to viruses that impair bioreactors, and if cruciviral genes included now are untranslatable condons, and the changes could also allow synthetic biologists to repurpose a freed redundant codon for an entirely different function, such as for coding new synthetic amino acids. For this study, Church's team decided to eliminate 7 of the microbes, 64 codons, and that target seemed like a good balance between the number of changes that appeared technically achievable and the number that might be too many for a cell to survive. And the 7 spare codons could eventually be repurposed to code up to 4 new unnatural amino acids. But making so many changes, even with the latest DNA techniques such as CRISPR, still appeared to be impossible. And luckily, the cost of synthesizing DNA has plummeted over the past decade. We found out it went from millions of dollars to just thousands of dollars. I lost my place for a second. I changed tabs. And I'm out of my realm of comfort zone here. So anyway, the cost of synthesizing has plummeted over the past decade, so instead of editing the genome one site at a time, Church's team used machines to synthesize long stretches of the recoded genome from scratch, each chunk containing multiple changes. Did they just say that they encoded it from scratch? Used machines to synthesize long stretches of the recoded genome from scratch, yes. Of course, remember, George Church is the one who wants to create the full synthetic human genome. The team has now turned to the laborious job of inserting these chunks into E. coli one by one and making sure that none of the genetic changes is lethal to the cell. And the researchers have only tested 63% of the recoded genes so far, but remarkably, few of these changes have caused any trouble, they say. Does this progress report from Church's lab put biologists on the doorstep of a new era of virus-free bioengineered cells? Well, more than likely on the driveway of the doorstep, they said. The upcoming phases of synthesis testing and assembly are likely to take several years, and the toughest 5% of the design may end up requiring 95% of the effort. So don't worry about it, people. We've just started this in the lab. And we're nowhere near getting done, so, you know, just don't pay attention to what's going on behind the curtain, wink, because you know it's going to happen way faster than what they're leading us to believe. And in the meantime, another issue is likely to dominate discussions, and that is safety. One concern is that many of the unnatural proteins that the recoded E. coli could be engineered to produce may be toxic, and the cell's resistance to viruses would give them a competitive edge if they, oh, lo and behold, ever escaped into the environment or into our own guts. Ding, ding, ding. Like I said, E. coli is the one infection that we've been seeing all over the United States and all kinds of different restaurants and food producers, and they've had to do huge recalls. There's been meat, there's been lettuce, there's been restaurants. And people can get very sick and potentially die from an E. coli infection. So let's create a synthetic E. coli cell, bacterial cell, and let's see what happens. Let's take mad science gone mad and put the pedal to the metal and hope that these don't get out. I mean, I would really like to know if they are doing this research in just a standard university lab. You know, maybe they got some goggles and a white pretend doctor's coat on, or are they in a level 4 biofacility? Because I have not seen anything in any of these stories that we've read. You know, we did a lot of the DOD stuff, if you remember, when we had smallpox found sitting for 30 years on top of a filing cabinet, and anthrax that we thought was dead because it was irradiated, shipped to military bases all over the planet, that those were being done in level 4 biofacilities at either DOD or CDC facilities. But everything that we have been reading in regards to this CRISPR technology and some of this unleashing of the mad genies out of the bottle, I haven't seen anything at all talking about security measures. Just, you know, oh, we got to look at maybe the ethics. Maybe, if we think about it or if we think it's important. But we're not looking at whether or not you have an approved biofacility to be screwing around with this stuff. Now, who would be responsible for that? I mean, it's a private university. It might be interesting. I don't know if anybody has an in to MIT or Yale or any of these other places where they're doing this research. But I would really be interested in a phone call or an understanding as to what's going on in these labs to protect any of these engineered viruses from, as they say it, escaping into the environment or into our own guts. And didn't we find out not too long ago that things such as obesity, which they say can be caused from damaged microbiomes in your gut, we found out that obesity could even be contagious because of the, the air that floats around you. You know, some of these could get out when you cough, when you sneeze. You have bacteria that leaves your body and gets into the aerosolized moisture coming from your body into the environment around you. So who's to say that some of these researchers working with some of these genetically modified microbes couldn't unintentionally get infected? I mean, we're talking about a bacterial size here, and then start spreading this around, become the typhoid Mary. I mean, good question. I would say, and I don't see that being asked anywhere, the fail-safe that church plans to build into these microbes is superficially similar to the one used to control the bioengineered dinosaurs in the film Jurassic Park. And, you know, again, really interesting that they mentioned Jurassic Park in regards to George Church, because we found out when we did the little expose on who George Church was and we listened to his interview, that George Church is also involved in resurrecting the woolly mammoth. You know, I mentioned I saw that documentary on them searching low and high across Africa to find the perfect surrogate elephant to be able to host the resurrected genome of the woolly mammoth. And I don't know, I mean, I didn't see anything in there either about them building kill switches into that woolly mammoth. We also saw about the kill switches in the GMO mosquitoes using tetracycline. But then we find out after they release all these mosquitoes in places like Brazil that, oh, guess what? Tetracycline is used a lot in farming and in farm animals. And it is available in a lot of different places in the environment. So kill switches are not fail-safe. Those resurrected creatures in Jurassic Park could not survive without a special nutrient supplied by their human masters, and that is, until they found, ding ding, a food source of the nutrient in the wild. In a study published in Nature last year, Church demonstrated a fail-safe system for engineered microbes that should be far more robust. Not only does it require nutrient not occurring naturally, but it appears, ding ding, to be virtually impossible for cells to overcome the barrier through mutation or mating with normal cells in the wild. And yeah, I'd like to believe that one, but never say never, because nature is a wondrous thing and they overcome so many different obstacles over the millions of years that we still happen to be alive here as a living organism on the planet. So I don't know about that. Whether others will agree with Church that his fail-safe is unbeatable remains to be seen. Ding, ding. The term safe needs a lot more scrutiny, says Carr. And instead of the all-or-nothing connotations of safe or not safe, it should be more useful to describe degrees of risk. Yes, like Department of Homeland Security, red, yellow, green, as to whether or not we have a terror threat. I mean, this is biological terror, people. This is coming out of the bioterror program. This all comes out of places such as Fort Detrick, Maryland, and Plum Island, where we had Operation Paperclip scientists doing mad science on animals, bacteria, and using things such as insects as disease vectors. It's also where a vaccine program continued from after Nixon inked that we no longer will be participating in chemical biological warfare except for in defensive measures for making vaccines. And of course, you need the pathogen to make the vaccine. Hence, under the covers, bioterror, biowarfare program has always, always continued. All right, well, I mentioned this story quite a few times, and I think we might have even have talked about this when it first came out, but I'm going to read it again because it just seems so amazing to me that just out of the blue in a puddle, we found 35 new groups of bacteria never, ever before seen. And, of course, bacteria is more numerous than any human cells that are out there. And if you didn't think we were outnumbered before, you better think again, especially considering we've heard Clint Richardson and Patrick Jordan multiple times now on Sholly's show on Sunday. And this last week, not this week, the week before, they had had a very long, involved discussion talking about bacteriophages. And bacteriophages is, if that's a word, bacteriophagi role in CRISPR technology. You know, these things outnumber us 10,000 to 1, I think they said, or maybe even 10 million to 1. And they feed on biological material. And maybe we'll even dig into bacteriophages later today. Anyway, let's read about this. The mysterious and diverse world of bacteria just got its very own expansion pack. A total of 35 new groups or phyla of bacteria have been discovered in the groundwater in Rifle, Colorado. Well, feel sorry for the people drinking that water. I mean, we just, 35 out of the blue, came out of nowhere. How amazing, we just discovered them. The finding will likely add a bunch of new species to the tree of life. Species that are quite different from other bacteria, scientists note. Yeah, not only are they never before seen, but they're way different than anything we've ever seen before. And that's what's really remarkable. The number of new bacterial groups is almost the same as the number of known animal phyla here on Earth. We were always outnumbered, but you might still want to let that magnitude of this discovery sink in. Now, we know that they do a lot of this mad science research in places such as Colorado, so what are the chances that we just found 35 new groups or phyla of bacteria living in groundwater in one city that are going to add new species to the tree of life? And they're just so different than anything else we've ever seen. I mean, it's just incredible. I think we should play the lotto. The number of bacterial groups discovered represents about 15% of the total number of bacteria that we have ever documented. 15%, says Jill Banfield, a geomicrobiologist at the University of California, Berkeley, and a co-author of the study published in Nature magazine. This represents a substantial modification of the tree of life. Ding, ding, ding. In the study, researchers used very fine filters to capture the microorganisms in groundwater at a remediation site in Rifle, Colorado. And the filter's holes were so fine that the scientists were able to capture the bacteria that are only about 400 nanometers across. And these microorganisms that normally will just pass through the kinds of filters that we use to sterilize water. So, you know, I really need to do some research into Rifle, Colorado and find out what is there. And how is this possible? Is it only in Rifle, Colorado, or do these exist everywhere and we just happen to find them in Rifle, Colorado? Because, I mean, don't you think that this should cause a launch of a global investigation as to whether or not 15% of the entire tree of life that's just been found happens to be an anomaly? And if it's an anomaly, what is going on in Rifle, Colorado? So, anyway, back to the story. Then the scientists analyzed these samples, and thanks to the DNA they gathered, they found brand new genomes. 8 complete and 789 near complete genomes. But the new genomes don't necessarily mean that many new species. Each genome comes from one organism, but some of the genomes are so close to each other that you probably wouldn't say that they were different bacteria. Still, the diversity uncovered by the researchers is substantial, especially if you think about how long these organisms have gone unnoticed. Yeah, is it 130 million years or was it about 3 weeks since we accidentally had a spill into the Rifle River? I mean, come on. You cannot get me to believe that you just found 15% more of the tree of life in this river in Rifle, Colorado. I just don't believe it. This is a line of bullshit if I ever heard one. These lineages evaded more than 130 years of microbial cultivation studies. I mean, it's just incredible, says Brian Hedlund, a microbiologist at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, who didn't participate in the study. And I think this work is incredibly exciting. So as we just read a story about good old Georgie Church, Mr. Synthetic Biology himself, who got $33 million from DARPA to start developing synthetic DNA and creating new organisms, they just found, you know, where they do a lot of Department of Defense research, all of these new genomes and bacteria living in a puddle. And a little more than a puddle, but still, in the groundwater. And, you know, in the groundwater, that filters out a lot of shit in the silt. That's why spring water is just so much better than anything else. And it's got to make you wonder. I just got to say, this is probably one of the oddest stories. And I got to tell you, this never really made mainstream news either. Banfield and her team had suspected that they might find new bacteria, but they weren't expecting this level of diversity, and I'd like to know why they had suspected that too, because I don't think it says. And the fact that these organisms are so different from other known species is particularly intriguing. These bacteria have very small genomes and unusual genetic features, says Banfield. Now, you know, Church just said too, the genomes are so huge that it's going to take us so long to come up with that last 95% because it's so complicated. Well, hey, why not create some simple ones just like they said they found? They're very simple and very different from anything else. I don't know. To me, I would call that a dotted black Sharpie line to a weirdness dot that says that there is something malevolent afoot here. And call me crazy. Pull out that tinfoil hat. But it just seems odd to me that after 130 years of looking at bacteria, we just found a whole additional 15%. That's just so different from anything else that we don't know where it came from, scratching our heads. The bacteria has very small genomes and unusual genetic features, says Banfield. They also seem to lack the kinds of metabolic pathways that are usually required for independent growth, meaning that they need the help of other bacteria to survive. But the researchers don't know much more than that at the moment. Characterizing these organisms, as well as their relationships with other bacteria, will take some time. And remember, we read a story maybe a month or so ago about, I wonder if these are the same sorts, the new bacteria that they found that lives on other bacteria in a symbiotic relationship in all these years. And we'd never seen them before, but now they think that maybe these little bacteria that live on the bigger bacteria might actually be causing disease in humans. Because these organisms are so unusual, and very distantly related to the organisms that have been studied in the lab. A large fraction of the genes encoded by their genomes remain enigmatic, says Banfield. This paper provided a very good accounting of genes that may be important for the physiology of these organisms. But in reality, we have a long way to go before we will deeply understand the nature of these microorganisms, how they make a living, how they impact their symbionts, and their ecosystem more broadly. So let that one sink in for a little bit. Because, like I said, even though I've read that story before, it came up in conversation the other day, and, you know, it just is one of those stories that really makes you scratch your head and wonder, how did we not see these, and how are they so different from anything else, and how are 35 of them living in the same water source? There was another story that came out of sciencealert.com. This really caught my attention. It says, and we're not going to watch this video just because I'm on a landline. So it's not going to work, but there is a story that goes along with it. It says, this video perfectly explains why CRISPR really will change the world forever. Ding, ding, ding. It is so much more than the hype. And we've been saying that since day one, probably 2-3 years now. We've been talking about CRISPR. It's finally hitting the headlines as, of course, the new way to cure all disease, going to cure the big C. But remember, CRISPR, we're using E. coli bacteria again, as well as other things, to be able to zip and unzip DNA in humans and other creatures. This is how we're also creating the gene drives, those gene drives that can do population suppression or population elimination that they are tinkering with in genetically modified mosquitoes. We've heard a lot about genetic engineering over the past 2 decades, and lately there's been even more hype about a new molecular tool called CRISPR, which acts like a cut and paste tool for DNA. And also remember, you know, we looked at the original ways for genetically modifying food using viruses, putting the payload in, infecting a cell, and then injecting the new payload that then reproduces and makes changes to the DNA. And now they are also utilizing CRISPR on food. Mushrooms were one. I saw a couple others. I don't remember off the top of my head. But they won't need to label any of those as genetically modified because they're not doing the genetic modification in the lab. No, they're creating the bacteria that then goes in to do the genetic modification. Ergo, we don't need to put any labels on it whatsoever. Anyway, back to the story. But what many of us don't realize is that after years of talking about it, we are on the verge of a major change for society. And this is what I've been saying. We're going to be turned on our head. One where we can edit genes as easily as we give medications today. This is going to be the new doctor tool. Push a button. Zip, zip, zip. Zap, zap, zap. And you're going to be fixed. We can fix you. As the latest episode of Courage Jock, and I don't even know what that is. It must be a show. It's a YouTube. So we'll have to check that out maybe tomorrow. It's the latest episode of Kurzgesagt, Kurzgesagt, looks German, so brilliantly explains, just like no one in the 80s believed that computers would ever take over everything, most of us today don't really think that genetic editing won't change everything. Well, except for me. But we were wrong because of CRISPR. So what exactly is CRISPR? After all, humans have been genetically engineering other species for millennia by breeding food and pets to have more traits we like and less of traits we don't. And yeah, that's called hybriding. But that is really nature's way to mix and match and cross-pollinate between plants or animals to be able to get brown cows versus blue cows. You know, I mean, that is selective breeding is what that's called. That's not genetically editing. And I mean, it's just kind of like when you go to the whole radiation argument and scientists try to tell you that Fukushima is no different than standing in the sun or eating a banana. It's absolute utter bullshit, okay? They're messing with your heads. They're putting apples next to oranges and telling you they're the same, okay? Selective breeding is not genetic editing. And that's actually what they said, okay? It's not. It is not genetic editing. Once we discovered DNA, we've been figuring out ways to tinker with this process on the back end, too. Now fast forward a few years, and we genetically engineered mice, genetically engineered humans, and of course, genetically engineered food. They're saying we already genetically engineered humans. And I mean, they've been doing it experimentally, even though people have been dying. That newest one, we had brain inflammation. 3 people died, and they had to stop the test. But don't forget, sometime this month in August, and August is almost over, China was going to be CRISPRing humans to see whether or not they could cure squamous cell lung cancer. And we have that project at Penn U. They're still waiting for the last of the approvals to be able to CRISPR humans to cure 3 different types of cancer. So we'll see where that ends up. But while genetic engineering has played an important role in medicine, the existing techniques available up until now have been expensive, slow, and incredibly complicated. Well, all that's changing now. Don't worry. Thanks to CRISPR and good old Jennifer Doudna and George Church, the cost of genetic engineering has shrunk by 99% basically overnight. And that was a company, I wish I remembered their name. They were involved with 23andMe, the owner of 23andMe being the ex-wife of Sergey Brin of Google. That company that was doing all the back-end genetic sequencing for 23andMe is the one that's brought the cost down so incredibly. Although we are now using CRISPR in humans and other animals, and notice how they keep putting humans in there. Humans, like, you know, they got to make it so you accept it as it's normal. They're not mentioning that CRISPRing humans is purely 100% experimental right now and not always successful. But let's keep saying it in this mainstream publication that, yeah, we're CRISPRing humans. Don't worry about it. There's commercials, right? There's commercials on the TV about we're now using CRISPR in humans and other animals. The system was originally founded inside of bacteria, where it is used as a genetic weapon to stop bacteria from being infected by viruses. Yes, even microbes get infected. And guess what that is? Guess what that genetic weapon is? Bacteria being infected by viruses? Oh, those were bacteriophages. Yes, they were. As the video above explains, that we're not going to watch much more beautifully than we can. After a virus has infected a bacteria once, that bacteria keeps a little portion of its DNA locked in a genetic archive called CRISPR. And even if it ever gets infected again, this viral DNA is turned into RNA, and it is fed into a secret weapon, ding, ding, called Cas9, an enzyme that hunts down any DNA that matches the one in the archive and then expertly cuts it out of the bacteria. It is almost like a DNA surgeon, says Kirk Stuck. So far, so good, but a few years ago, scientists then discovered, because remember, that was when CRISPR was a killing machine, as George Church discussed. But a few years ago, lo and behold, CRISPR came out of nowhere when scientists discovered that it was actually programmable, which means that you can tell it any piece of DNA you want removed, put the system into a living cell, and then it cuts that DNA right out of the genome. Researchers are already using CRISPR to treat diseases in animal models, and as of this month, in humans. And there's a link to that, so we're going to take a look Oh, it is. It's a story we read about China being about ready to CRISPR humans. So no update yet on that. But what we see happening now is just like the supercomputers of the 80s, nothing, nothing compared to what is coming. And that is not just hype. And remember, I told you guys, this is just the very beginning. That's the scariest part about this. We are looking at all this right now going, holy shit, look at all this crazy stuff that's going on. But this is just the very first drop in the bucket. Fast forward just 10 years from now, looking at the trajectory the technology has been taking, 10 years from now, and we just had this argument this weekend, 10 years from now, this world will not be anything like we see it today. And trust me on that one. My family doesn't believe me, but trust me on that one. To fully comprehend exactly what a future with CRISPR might look like, oh, just dig into your wildest nightmares, as I'm going to say. The Minotaur soldiers will be on the loose with their laser beam vision and their big pointy fangs and the wings that they can pop out on demand. I mean, the insanity that it could potentially be, especially when we read about the DARPA woman saying that we could create life on demand and terraform planets and find out that DARPA is giving $33 million to the Broad Institute to create DNA manufacturing. It's not a very pretty future. To fully comprehend exactly what a future with CRISPR might look like, how the system works, and what it all means, you really need to check out the video above, because it's not only fascinating, but it's also incredibly important. We're going to have to watch that tomorrow. What we will say, without giving too much away, is that if the idea of designer babies makes you uncomfortable, and I told you that's how they're going to first sell it, not only the cures for cancer, but the next thing and the way to commercialize it is so Johnny might be able to have brown hair or blonde hair or blue eyes or big thumbs or a larger emblegata in his brain. I mean, they'll be able to push buttons. You'll have a menu and you could select what your new spawn is going to have his traits, and you know that's going to happen for a price. But if designer babies makes you uncomfortable, then get ready, because that's a world that we are already living in, and that's what they say. So put on a seatbelt, people, because I'm telling you, this is just not a good picture. All right, it looks like this video is 16 minutes, so I'll make sure I put time aside tomorrow, and we will check that out. All right, but it goes a little bit further because there was another story. Then this one came out August 9th of 2016 out of Scientific American, Beyond CRISPR. So not only do we have CRISPR smacking us in the face, telling us it's going to turn the world upside down on its head and genetically modify every living creature on this planet, but now we have Beyond CRISPR, a guide to the many ways to edit a genome. The popular technique, unfortunately, has limitations that has now sparked a search for CRISPR alternatives. Yeah, just what we freaking needed. Like CRISPR wasn't bad enough. We're going to go all balls out to the wall and try and find out what else we can use to bastardize 1.0 biology that seems to be so incredibly imperfect that we need to recreate it in our own image. The CRISPR-Cas9 tool enables scientists to alter genomes practically at will, hailed as dramatically easier, cheaper, and more versatile than previous technologies. It has blazed through labs around the world, yeah, thanks to a company named Adogene. You guys remember, we covered that story. They sent out 60,000 copies of CRISPR bacteria to anyone and everyone who requested it for free. Yeah, to make sure that they democratized genetic alteration. Remember, we read about that. Just to make sure we don't have the haves and the have-nots. We want to make sure everybody can be genetically modified. But, oh, don't be scared, Johnny. Because there isn't going to be any underground group that's going to try to create some sort of bioweapon with this. No, don't worry. Oh, wait, what? Yeah, we saw a story not too long ago that it is now a matter of national security. So we need to keep pumping money into genetic modification techniques to make sure that we can protect ourselves with things such as synthetic immune systems in humans that'll go in and genetically modify your DNA to make you immune to any pathogen that ever shows up in the environment on purpose or accidentally, or shows up in a puddle in Colorado. I mean, guys, you see the lunacy of this. You know, I can sit here and talk all day, and told at the table yesterday how stupid I am for talking about this and how I should just live my life and not pay attention because this isn't happening in my lifetime. Hate to say it, but it is happening right this very second in all of our lifetimes in laboratories and puddles in Colorado. But for all the devolution, which is what I think is happening, CRISPR-Cas9 has its limitations. It is excellent at going to a particular location on a genome and cutting there, says bioengineer Prashant Mali at the University of California, San Diego. But sometimes your application of interest demands a bit more. The zeal, and yeah, I'd call it zeal, maybe even add a little zest. The zeal with which researchers jumped on a possible new gene editing system called NGAGO, N-G-A-G-O, earlier this year, reveals an undercurrent of frustration with CRISPR-Cas9, a drive to find alternatives. It is a reminder of how fragile every new technology is, says who? Oh, George Church, a geneticist at the Harvard Medical School in Boston, Massachusetts. NGAGO, N-G-A-G-O, is just one of a growing library of gene editing tools, and some are a variation on the CRISPR theme, but others offer brand new ways to edit genomes. CRISPR-Cas9 may one day be used to rewrite the genes responsible for genetic diseases, but the component of the system, an enzyme called Cas9, and a strand of RNA to direct the enzyme to the desired sequence are too large to stuff into the genome of the virus most commonly used in gene therapy to shuttle the foreign genetic material into human cells. Yes, the virus that scans your cells to find every crack and crevice and then invades them. The solution comes in the form of a mini Cas9, which was plucked from the bacterium Staphylococcus aureus, and it is small enough to squeeze into the virus used in one of the gene therapies currently on the market. Last December, two groups used the mini-me, they're calling it mini-me Cas9, in mice to correct the gene responsible for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Cas9 will not cut everywhere it's directed to. A certain DNA sequence must be nearby for that to happen. And this demand is easily met in many genomes, but it can be a painful limitation for some experiments. Researchers are now looking to microbes to supply enzymes that have different sequence requirements so that they can expand the number of sequences they can modify. Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. One such enzyme called CPF1 may become an attractive alternative. Smaller than Cas9, it has different sequence requirements and it is highly specific. There's also a third enzyme called C2C2, not R2D2, C2C2, which targets RNA rather than DNA, a feature that holds potential for studying RNA and combating viruses with RNA genomes. Many labs use CRISPR-Cas9 only to delete sections in a gene, thereby abolishing its function. And people want to declare victory like that is editing, says Church, but burning a page of a book is not editing the book. Those who want to swap one sequence for another face a more difficult task. When Cas9 cuts the DNA, the cell often makes mistakes as it stitches together the broken ends, and this creates the deletions that many researchers desire. But researchers who want to then rewrite the DNA sequence, like people like George Church, rely on a different repair pathway that can insert a new sequence, a process that occurs at a much lower frequency than the error-prone stitching. Everyone says the future is editing many genes at one time, and I think, well, we can't even do one now with reasonable efficiency, says Daniel Voitis of the University of Minnesota St. Paul. But developments in the past few months have given Voitis hope. In April of 2016, researchers announced that they had disabled Cas9 and tethered to it an enzyme that converts one DNA letter to another. So now we can turn A to C and T to G. I mean, what insanity is that? Just like, what was that game? I don't remember what it was called, where they had the bean bags and you had the X's and O's on the square on the ground. It was a lawn game. Remember that? You flipped the bean bag at it and you tried to get a tic-tac-toe. Yeah, well, just like that. The disabled Cas9 still targeted the sequence directed by its guide RNA, but it could not cut. Instead, it attached an enzyme that switched the DNA letters, ultimately yielding a T where there once was a C. A paper published in Science last week reports very similar results. Voitis and others are hopeful that tethering other enzymes to disabled Cas9 will allow for different sequence changes. In May of 2016 also, a paper in Nature Biotechnology unveiled an entirely new genome editing system. Researchers claimed they could use a protein called NGAGO to slice DNA at predetermined sites without needing a guide RNA or a specific neighboring genome sequence. And instead, the protein, which is made by bacteria, is programmed using a short DNA sequence that corresponds to the target area. This finding kicked off a wave of excitement and speculation that CRISPR-Cas9 would be unseated, but laboratories have so far failed to reproduce the results. And even so, there's still hope that proteins from the family that NGAGO belongs to, also known as AGO or Argonauts, made by other bacteria, could pave a way forward. Other gene editing systems are also in the pipeline. Although some have lingered there for years, there is an extensive project aimed to edit genes in bacteria, and Church's lab did not reach for CRISPR at all. Instead, his team relied heavily on a system now called Lambda Red, which can be programmed to alter DNA sequences without the need for guide RNA. But despite 13 years of research in Church's lab, Lambda Red only works so far in bacteria. Church and Feng Zhang, a bioengineer with the Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard in Cambridge, Massachusetts, says that their labs are also working on developing enzymes that integrates and recombines. Integrasses and recombinases for use as gene editors, which who the hell knows what that is. And by exploring the diversity of enzymes, and there was a big story about that, I have to dig that one up, we can make the genome editing toolbox even more powerful, says Zhang. We have to continue to explore the unknown. So what do you think of them apples? Let's keep exploring the unknown and moving forward into the world of insanity. And I guess to top this one off, we've been doing a lot about the brain and how they've been able to insert and delete memories. And there's a story about beaming advertisements directly into your brain and being able to scan your brain and pinpoint you from a crowd, being able to use Wi-Fi, LED lighting technology to do brain scans and all kinds of other crazy stuff. They've even been able to to look inside the brain and determine your decision-making processes. Well, check this one out. They now have been able to look at the brain and distinguish brain areas that can tell good from bad. When someone offends you when you're smiling, your brain should interpret it as a genuine smile, or do they interpret it as an offense? Researchers at the Max Planck Institute for Human Cognitive and Brain Sciences in Leipzig and the University of Haifa, Israel, have identified neural mechanisms that help us understand whether a difficult situation is emotionally positive and or negative. And to do this, they use emotionally confusing scenes from like Quentin Tarantino's movie Reservoir Dogs. If anyone's ever seen that, I gotta tell you, Reservoir Dogs is probably one of my favorite movies of all time. So it's kind of funny that they're using Reservoir Dogs as their scenes for testing people. You know, here's the thing, as they start understanding all the secrets of the brain and whether or not your brain is processing something as good or bad, or what you're thinking, or how it's working through all of its processes, and then we find out that they can scan and read our brain with just light technology, as well as being able to diagnose mental disease by speech, or I just saw by the colors of your pictures that you post on things such as Instagram, they can tell whether or not you're depressed or whether or not you're having issues. Guys, this should be very scary. We have all of this combined research on neurology going on as a collaborative effort with laboratories in Israel, and they have also been able to determine whether or not you're good or bad, or you have future crime just by your genetic shape. All right, guys, make sure you have an awesome Monday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.